All right, guys, well, let's call to order the Highlight Rural Fire District. Thank you guys all for coming to our board meeting. Reminder to you guys, the public, that every meeting is being recorded. Is there any comment on anything not on our agenda?
Nothing.
Okay. Highlight consent agenda. Do I have anything that needs to be pulled, or do I have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay.
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Aye.
Justin?
Yes. All right. Regular agenda, swearing in new recruits.
All right. All right, guys, stand on up. Standing is perfectly fine. So, board members, members of the public, this is our Spring 24 Recruit Academy, comprised of 8 firefighters and 2 driver operators. So, if you guys would, starting with Mr. Welch, if you would please introduce yourself to the board.
I am Noah Welch, and I'm from Washington, and I currently work for Yard Guard.
My name is Evan Johns. I'm from Colorado, and I'm a student at MSU.
Very nice.
My name is Tyler Holmes. I'm from Denver, Colorado, and I work for AMR Bozeman.
Very nice.
My name is Zakar Tuskin, born and raised in Bozeman, and I work at Murdoch's.
Very nice.
My name is Jack Vincent. I'm from Steamboat Springs, Colorado, and I'm currently a student at Montana State.
I'm Sam Chu. I'm from San Diego, California, and I'm currently a student at MSU.
I'm Brandon Pelton. I'm from Tucson, Arizona, and I'm a student at Montana State.
I'm Ryan Montgomery. I'm originally from Colorado. I currently work at Best Practice Medicine.
My name is Steve Nash. I'm from Bozeman, and I'm a psychotherapist in town.
My name is Kate O'Brien. I'm from Helena, Montana, and I work for Murdoch's currently.
Awesome. Right.
So, if you guys would, please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I do solemnly swear to faithfully execute my duties as a firefighter for the Highlight Fire District. To selflessly serve the citizens with respect, integrity, and excellence. To support my fellow firefighters, our values, and show a continuous effort to improve our team. To uphold the mission of the Highlight Fire District, the Constitution of the United States of America, and the State of Montana. Thank you. All right, so now we will move on to pinning badges and presentation of the completion of certification for our Recruit Academy. And just so everybody's aware, as a reminder to the board, so the Recruit Academy comprises of 175 hours of training, which all these individuals have completed. Our training is in accordance with the Montana State University Fire Services Training School Firefighter 1 curriculum, which is what they follow. So if you would, as I call your name, please come up. And family members, if you would like to pin as I call your person's name, please come up. So we will start with Sam Chu. Thank you. Jones. Sorry, I guess the first few guys I didn't say your title. Firefighter Kate O'Brien. Firefighter Jackson. Thank you. you guys for your hard work. I know the academy was long, long days, tough days. Dealt with Reed and Mac a lot, and you guys pulled through it just fine. And I appreciate that hard work, and I appreciate you now going out, serving our citizens, and joining our team. Thank you.
Meet the needs of the district. Appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Thank you. You guys are the best.
So family, friends, you're welcome to hang out. If you don't want to stay for the meeting portion, you're welcome to go into the resident quarters and celebrate. Thank you, guys.
Are you good?
Yep.
Yep, thanks you guys.
Thank you.
Congratulations. No, don't congratulate.
Replacement of Ray Fire Station. Any updates?
So the only update I have is we have a meeting scheduled on the 24th with Think One to actually start to put the pieces together a little bit of the plan to get this project rolling. Think One's been given the geotech report that we had done previously to review. So that's the next step is June 24th.
Okay. And we were previously said that it's no big deal about zoning, right?
So zoning's no big deal. We do still, we need to go through, part probably going through the process is going to be to go and do the lot realignment or combine the two lots together and then go before the zoning and figure out what we need to do there. I'm not sure that we need to do much because the zoning map for the county, the current fire stations, all sit within whatever the area around them is zoned. There's no special zoning for the building or the lot, so.
So it's C for commercial?
Yeah, I mean, this is actually, out at Sourdough, we're actually zoned agricultural. Cottonwood is low density residential, and the Ray station currently sits on high density residential.
Nice.
At the boundary realignment, that should be a pretty straightforward process, I would think.
Yeah. Just an application, basically. Right. Yeah.
Cool. Fire chief's report.
So I apologize that I failed to get a fire chief's report in your board packet, but I did get one completed. Give you a quick rundown. So June of 24, we ran 64 calls. That brings us to date 359 calls. Current roster is sitting at 44 members. The command coverage shortages are a work in progress. We did, as I mentioned last month, or 2 months ago, we unfortunately lost one of our hopefuls in Blake Martin. He got a job with Bellingham Fire in Washington. So he left the department.
Steve Kerbel will be done at the end of the month. He is going into his next round of nursing school. So he's going to Georgia for that. We do have a plan to begin this fall to bring up our next group that Mac and Chris are putting the pieces to that together. Once we get in the fall, we should have some stability in people's schedule to work them through the training, get them through the shadowing, and then hopefully starting next calendar year, start to plug the holes of the problem. We are sitting at 7 resident firefighters at Sourdough. We will, in the end of August, we'll be back to 8. The station will be full again. Cottonwood Station has 4 residents, so that station is full. And the Ray House now has 4 residents in it. Kate Brownell recently got back from an injury that she went home to Washington to get healed up from. And she is our new Ray House member, so the Ray House is now full. Still doing non-resident day shifts at Sourdough. Training's going on as usual. The Spring Academy, obviously, has been completed. We're still working through the EMS discussion with the county. I'll be going with a group to Kootenai County, Idaho, which is a model we're looking at possibly going to for Gallatin County to meet with the officials there and get a feel for their organization. I'm still on all the boards and committees that I've always reported on. Ambulance transporting is moving along. It is busy, but we're moving along and making collections. Happy to report no firefighter injuries. And when I type this up, all apparatus were in service. Colin recently found out today we had a pretty significant water pump failure on engine 6-3 that is going to require a pretty extensive rebuild of that water pump on that truck.
6-3 is one of the twins?
It is one of the twins, yeah.
Yep. Scheduled for replacement.
Yep, it just couldn't make it another 9 months.
So does it look as though it would be reasonable to incur the cost of repair for that, or?
Well, I'm not sure. Colin's still putting the parts list together of what we'll need. I mean, I believe so. For what the truck is worth, you know, one, we're still going to need it until next spring, summer, and then we'll, if we have to even put a more significant fix into it as we go to sell it, we'll at least be able to hopefully recover that.
When you talked about the going over to Kootenai County,
yep,
to review their ambulance transport program in the county, how is that structured?
Yeah, so it's one of the models we're looking at taking on in Gallatin County. So what they do as a county is they're assessed an EMS mill. So it's a levy that goes directly to EMS, and it's collected countywide by a special district. And then there is an oversight board made up of, so Kootenai County, Idaho is like Coeur d'Alene, Post Falls, and some of the smaller communities around there. There's an oversight board that then decides how to distribute those funds that brings in, and then certain fire departments in that county provide ambulance transporting across the county. So depending on, I don't know for sure if what level, if there's different BLS, ALS levels, but basically they're given funding to provide that service. So I know in Kootenai County, Idaho, each fire district owns their own equipment. So the funds they collect go to capital replacement of those ambulances, and it's set on a schedule. And they are, I think they're a combination paid and volunteer. So the folks that are paid to the service are paid out of that collection. So it's one of the options we think could work here.
So I suppose this is where you'll learn a little bit more about how the distribution mechanism works mm-hmm. with the oversight committee then.
Yep.
Yeah. So yep. I suspect based on call loads and that kind of stuff.
Do they still charge?
Yep. Yeah. So they charge and collect for ambulance really, on top of that levy. One, we are looking at to sell, if we would go down that route, that some of this still has to be worked out on the financial end of things, but to go to the voters and ask for the support of an EMS levy is adopting Stillwater County has a model similar to what we're doing for billing right now, that if you're a resident of the county, you get a significantly reduced bill rate. They obviously, Stillwater County, has I-90 going through it. So anybody who's outside or not a county resident gets basically the max amount billed to them.
So out of curiosity, do they use Pintler billing?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think out of everybody who does ambulance transporting, there's only one or two agencies that don't use Pintler. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that county doesn't look as big as ours.
Yeah, I mean, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho is a decent-sized city. I don't know. Bozeman's probably bigger than that, though. It is fairly rural. I mean, besides Coeur d'Alene, it's a recreation area.
It's on its way to Spokane is really what it is.
Yep.
But, yeah, my concern was our county's kind of long. We have a lot of, long miles in our county, and this county looks a lot smaller, but we'll address that when we get to it, I guess.
Yeah.
How to service it correctly. And
right. Yeah, and that's if we decide to go that direction, that's the job of the oversight board, is to figure out how we're going to, I mean, just to throw an example out there, if the city of Bozeman, the Central Valley Fire District, Highlight, the Big Sky Fire District, and the Hebigan Basin Fire District provided ambulance service, somehow it would have to be funded appropriately enough to be able to move those ambulances where they're needed. So it'd be, somebody would be posting an ambulance in Manhattan. So that those details would have to be worked out.
So is there an oversight committee? Is it elected members or appointed members, or do you have any idea how they?
In Kootenai County, I don't know for sure. I believe it is a mixture. I think it's got some fire chief representation and I think some elected official representation on it.
I almost think that we need some representation on the board. If, like board members, each board maybe needs to send a person onto that board so that we protect our interests, mm-hmm. make sure we're not selling our people short. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's always the challenge with committees like that, is how do you, how big do you make them so that they're still workable and still have good representation?
Yeah.
That'll be the challenge, I'm sure.
How does the Highway Patrol work around here? Where do they have boundaries at?
So they have districts, and there's a Bozeman district. I don't actually know how far it goes, though. They're pretty big. Because I know troopers will respond, all the way to West Yellowstone, to Livingston.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, they have a very large area. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. That sounds like a pretty workable model, really, because it brings the funds to, you distribute the funds, and then there's some accountability at each individual station level of how those funds are used, and you can evaluate the performance of each and start looking at performance metrics and figure out who's doing something better and who's doing something that could be improved upon. Yeah, it sounds to me like that's a pretty good model to look at.
Yeah, it's an option.
It's an option, right?
So the other thing I have to report on is yesterday myself, Walt, and Pete met with two board members from the Fort Ellis Fire Service Area, along with Frank Boynton, their fire chief. And just kind of, Fort Ellis has been doing some background checking on, you know, what working relationship would look like. Still very preliminary, just trying to answer some questions and see where, if this venture is worth for both agencies of getting into. There's still a lot we need to iron out and kind of answer. You know, from an operational standpoint, I think the whole group agrees that, you know, a larger working area is going to work out in the long run, just being that as things get busier and as the area continues to grow, the costs that are going to come along with that will be easier spread across a larger area rather than smaller areas doing essentially the same thing. And hopefully down the road we'd see some benefit of the elimination of duplication of service, where things like, you know, if Fort Ellis gets to the point where they need to hire a fire chief, that if we work together, that could be overseen by one fire chief. And even down to the equipment, that you know, we don't need to have all our own reserves. Fort Ellis doesn't need their own set of reserves. We can share those reserves to service a larger area. There is things we need to figure out. Obviously, there's still the question of their station debt and how to properly assess that so that across a larger area, being the two agencies, that debt is not necessarily being assessed across the entire area. And even down to the capital and where that all sits, that, you know, we have done a good job of setting us up for success with our capital and capital replacement. And we just obviously don't want to put our constituency at risk by taking on a bunch more capital without kind of that same level of thought process being put into how to replace that.
Yeah, so some of the data that need to be collected to analyze this at a more detailed level include, and Fort Ellis has already started accumulating that data. We haven't had a chance to look at it yet. In fact, I just received an email from one of their trustees, and basically they've started gathering the information from the county on taxable values, and so that we can start looking at how large will the fund base be if we apply the same mills that we currently have for operating to their taxable values. Will that generate enough revenue to meet the operating and capital replacement needs? And then the question, as Brian alluded to, regarding the debt, you know, how do we address that? There are three mechanisms. Basically, we can, you know, they can look at a bond, they can look at a RID, or they can use statute, which basically results in all of us absorbing it. And they're apparently, Chris Gray, he used to, I think Justin would remember Chris, he helped us with consolidation. When we went through that process, he used to work for the county attorney's office in the civil division, and now he's in private practice, but he's working with Fort Ellis on this question. And he understands that a little bit better. So those are, we have to get into the weeds a little bit more. You know, it's a little bit more at the 25 to 30,000 foot level, the discussion that we had. You know, so it's going to be a lot of work and probably involve discussions with, you know, county finance, county treasury, commissioner or two.
So they have not received anything yet to know how much their mills would.
They have, and yeah. I and Dan LaFrance, one of their trustees. I just as I was walking in the door, he had tried to email it to me earlier, and it didn't come through. And I just saw that he had sent another email with some of that information. So we're going to just have to start looking at that in more detail. As to, you know, if we are under the last reappraisal, our operating millage is at 32 and 0.14 or something like that. And so if we were to apply that in the current appraisal framework to their taxable value, you know, how much, the question is, how much would that generate? And would that be enough to meet operating and capital replacement, and then address the, most likely address the debt issue associated with their station separately?
Depending on how much money we get.
Right, exactly. And that's, and Brian, you know, and his staff are going to have to evaluate the operational, you know, do we look at it on a, costing it out on a per call basis, or per call medical, per call, you know, fire? How do we start objectively analyzing what the funding requirements will be, you know, for operations? And then, you know, we're getting tighter and tighter. We've been doing, obviously, a pretty good job on funding our capital replacement, but it's, you know, getting tighter all the time with the increased costs of equipment replacement, and then increased costs of personnel, and just, you know, everything from tires to fuel. You know, things aren't as cheap as they were 5 years ago. So we have to just sit down and more carefully look at those things.
I just got my new taxes for my house. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. Did you see yours?
Yeah, I paid them.
No, did you see the new thing of what this fall's going to be?
No, I haven't seen it. I haven't gotten a letter.
Oh my gosh. I started it with...
Mine's already doubled in 3 years.
I was at $2,000 a year, and this new one's $8,500.
But you built a new house.
Huh?
You built a new house.
I know, but they show that mine's worth more than his.
Yeah. Oh, no,
they show my taxable value at 1.5, and it's,
yeah.
I'm like, that's way high.
Yeah, well, and that's what it speaks to the taxpayer fatigue that we're witnessing in the Valley. If you look at the number of bond issues that failed in this spring's election and a couple last fall.
Well, I filled out the thing saying that I don't think it's right, you know, and because it would make my... mortgage payment go $450 a month. That's a bunch.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the taxpayer fatigue is a real thing in the Valley.
Yeah.
And so I think we have to be aware of that as we look at, you know, look at this process.
So you got a special notice then because of the improvement. They're taking the account, the new improvements.
Same thing we got last year. But last year it showed that it was 800, and now it says 1.5.
Yeah, I can't even read those things. They're so messed up.
Anyways, it said that you had to object within 30 days and provide documentation for why you think that their figure's wrong. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if it does anything. But whatever.
So is that fire station that they bond, eventually put a bond on it for Fort Ellis?
And that's yeah, there are basically three ways that could be funded. Right now they have two bank loans, right?
Mm-hmm.
And moving forward, you know, they could actually go through the process of becoming a standalone district if they chose to. So that'd be one. If they did that, then they'd have to talk to their constituents about either bonding, and even if we'd go through the consolidation process, they're going to have to look at, their constituents are going to have to look at whether they should bond or RID. And then there's a statute process. But the statute process, I need to look at that a little bit more carefully, because I think then we bear some of the burden of that if it's through statute. And the statute's what basically the whole process that Sourdough and Ray had to go through, because Ray was a fire service area, yeah, and Sourdough was a district, and we had to go to the legislature. Denise Heyman and Bruce Tuffett helped us get that legislation passed, yeah, and Chris was involved in helping write some of that. And so that allowed for that to occur. And so in our case, that debt got spread across all of the constituents in the new Highlight District.
Right.
And But the way our taxable values and everything worked out, you know, it was maybe slightly advantageous to sourdough, but it wasn't enough to be the benefits outweighed the cost in terms of, you know, operations and so on in that case. Yeah. And but it's not clear until we analyze the data
so
that would fall out with.
So just a question, our mills went down because property values went up.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so do we have to tell them how many mills we want to keep, or can we keep the mills the same where we continue to get more or less depending on property value?
Well,
or do we just try to keep everything neutral as far as our revenue?
So our revenue can grow two ways. One is through new construction, and then the other way is through inflation adjustments. And so that's why they have that millage adjustment. If you look at the last few years, you know, with the substantial increases in appraisals,
yeah,
you know, our millage has gone down both for our debt load and for operating, and we're allowed to increase it by through new construction and one half of the average of the previous 3 years of inflation, and so we're limited when we ask for max mills based on that formula.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so you can't, you know, in your case, you know, if we look at the appraisals, if they were to go maintain static mills, you know, our budget, you know, Brian would have a big budget, but we'd have a bigger tax bill too. And so they have to adjust, the county has to adjust those because they do have a limit as to how much that can grow. And I guess, am I getting that mm-hmm. about correct there?
Yeah, and then obviously we can ask for a levy increase to increase what we collect, but
right,
that has to be voted on.
Right.
Well, I thought we're at just whatever they call max mills, whatever that is.
Right. And max mills basically incorporates that one half of the previous 3 years plus new construction.
And that's so there is a formula for it. It's just not. Like if you we did 39 mills last year and we're at 32 mills this year, it doesn't transfer over that way.
Doesn't transfer over what, I guess, in what sense?
The mills don't stay the same.
No, correct, yeah, they have to adjust. If you think about the equation, if you have substantial increases in property values, the millage has to go down in order for
to try and keep our revenue the same.
Right, or allow it to increase by the amount the legal amount that we can increase it by.
I see.
Yeah, that's why if you think about it, when we started, I think when we first consolidated, I think that we were at about around 8 mills or somewhere in that neighborhood for the bond, 7.5, 8 mills, somewhere like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gradually over the years decreased down to three point some mills now for to service the debt on this. And of course, the other thing that was to our benefit is we reduced our payments through the, when that bond became callable a few years ago,
yeah,
we were in a fortunate position with the interest rate regime to get some really low interest rates at, you know, we're yeah, like point less than 1% on the remainder of our loan.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Trustee activities? Anything else? Good to go? All right, adjourned.
Next meeting?
Next meeting.
Oh, yeah. We do that first easily. The 20th.
And Cheryl, in terms of timing, I didn't look at the calendar. That still is ahead of the timing for submission of final budget.
20 look okay?
Yeah. It'll probably be the end of that week.
Yeah.
Maybe the next week.
So we'll probably be cutting it about right, because based on the timing that they usually give us the information.
August 7th is, you know, looking back, August 5th, August 7th is usually when I get the email info.
Yeah.
All right, we're